And hello, everybody. Welcome to another Monday edition of Move the Sticks. Brett Lewis here with our former NFL Scouts lead draft analyst, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, ready here on another Sunday that felt entirely upside down. Let me just correct me if I'm wrong here, but the number one total in scoring defense of the Buffalo Bills got absolutely dominated.
Yep.
The number one total in scoring offense got absolutely shut down.
Yeah.
We could do a full hour every week of stuff we don't know, yes, that we think we know, we have no idea. This league changes every single week.
And we are going to show you exactly what went right and wrong for some of those teams. We start, as we do each Monday, with our big three. Speaking of that number one total in scoring offense, yeah, they found out that the Chiefs are on a roll, notching their fourth straight win and doing it with defense. I repeat, the Chiefs are winning with defense over the Cowboys here on Sunday, limiting Dallas to just 276 total yards of offense and putting constant pressure on Dak Prescott, who had zero touchdowns and two interceptions. Cowboys fall 19-9, lowest point and yardage output of the season for Dallas. And Bucky, how did the Chiefs pass rush contribute to those totals for the Cowboys?
The domination up front was real. And I think the number one thing that happened for the Kansas City Chiefs, Chris Jones moved back inside to his natural position of defensive tackle, and he dominated. 3.5 sacks, 2 tackles for loss. It was all over the field. The penetration was persistent, and he did a great job of just completely disrupting the timing and the rhythm of the passing game. And when you get Chris Jones going, then you get some of the other guys going, it allows the coverage to be a little more comfortable, and it took the Cowboys out of their game. It was a great performance by this pass rush, and it's one that I think Steve Spagnuolo can hang his hat on.
And look, for the Cowboys, would it have helped to have Tyron Smith out of left tackle? Of course it would have, but everyone took their lumps in this game, including the All-Pro Zach Martin, who found out just how how difficult it is to deal with Chris Jones in the interior. And then when you get Chris Jones and Frank Clark lined up right next to each other, man, that caused some trouble for the Cowboys in this game, who had Dak Prescott. A passer rating of 45 when he was under pressure in this game, which felt like a lot, and almost one out of every three passing attempts for Dak Prescott came under duress. Of course, they're without Amari Cooper. CeeDee Lamb leaves in this game too, so a little bit decimated out there at wide receiver. But man, this is not what you expect, DJ, from a number one total offense and total scoring offense as well. Good news though, bright spot on the defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, when you flip over the other side of the tape and you watch what Micah Parsons is doing, especially what he's doing coming off the edge, they're going to have a big decision to make with him in terms of how they want to use him. I love the versatility. I love the fact he can play off the ball. You can put him in the middle of the field. But for me, if I'm the Dallas Cowboys going forward, we are going to park you on the edge. That is where you're going to live. I'm not exaggerating. This is a 15, 16, 17 sack edge rusher. Yeah. And if you want to look at it from Micah Parsons' perspective, I don't know, TJ Watt makes $28 million a year. Joey Bosa makes $27 million a year. Four of the top five paid defensive players in the league are edge rushers. I'd be lobbying heavy if I were him to make that my full-time position.
If we went back to that tape, doesn't it usually take two players to stop an option?
Yes.
Micah Parsons
was a solo
on stopping that read option for Patrick Mahomes, so much so he had to just curl up in a little ball and go down. I mean, Micah has been
He's in the defensive player of the year. Not
just rookie.
Right? Yeah. He's in the defensive player of the year conversation.
It feels like he has the DROI locked up here at this point among rookies. See if he can get into the big boy conversation there before it's all said and done. Let's move to game two of our big three. And for that, we take it to Minneapolis. The Minnesota Vikings get back to 500 and back into the NFC playoff picture after a 34-31 division win over the Green Bay Packers, who still sit atop the NFC North. But they waste a 4-touchdown performance from Aaron Rodgers because that Packers defense facing the full force of one of the NFL's most difficult to deal with offenses. And I feel like that sometimes flies a little bit under the radar here, DJ, but I mean, like, it's a pick-your-poison kind of deal trying to slow down Minnesota.
Yeah, I saw that when I was getting ready for that game against the Chargers and you're studying them. And I always try and look at it, okay, from a scouting perspective, who do you try to take away? What should be the focal point? And you go, okay, well, Dalvin Cook, you're one of the best running backs in the NFL. You got to find a way to slow him down. Well, I don't know. I want the ball to sail over my head. You've got Justin Jefferson to deal with. Adam Thielen can do his work in the middle of the field. It is a lot to deal with. And I feel like Kirk Cousins, we talk about the receivers, we talk about the running back. Let's give Kirk Cousins some love. He is playing outstanding football. I'd put his numbers up this year against any other quarterback in the league.
He's got the best touchdown interception ratio in football right now. And if, like, you're talking about MVPs being a quarterback award, like, Kirk Cousins is low-key in that conversation here for the Minnesota Vikings. And look, they were taking advantage of whatever the Packers were throwing at them on defense. Felt like the Packers busted some zone defense mm-hmm. looks early. And then they found out late that Justin Jefferson is almost impossible to cover one-on-one, which we saw in this game with the explosive plays. Kirk Cousins, by the way, on average threw the ball 11 yards down the field. That was almost double what his yards per attempt average has been throughout the course of this season. So they found some holes in that Packers secondary who's missing their best
quarterback. Yeah, look, they found some holes. It was bound to happen. Anytime you're missing a high-level player like Jaire Alexander and some of the other guys that they're missing defensively, Rashawn Gary, not able to pressure the passer, you're going to have more time to exploit some of the backups, and that's what Kirk Cousins was allowed to do. And then you have Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen, two of the best route runners in football. It doesn't matter if you have your A team available. They are hard guard, particularly when you have Dalvin Cook, who can command so much attention. So when you talk about this being an offense that is difficult to match up with, I don't know who you started the week saying, we want to erase this person and take them out of the game plan because it enhances our chances to win. Because all of the players on the perimeter can certainly win by themselves if you allow them to go big.
Guys, I'm just telling you, blood pressure medication in the Twin Cities is impossible to find. The Vikings have played 7 games this year that have been decided on the very last play, including this one with the Greg Joseph 29-yard field goal to win it. I mean, like, if you want to talk about a team that's going to be mm-hmm. in this playoff discussion here,
battle-tested,
yeah. It's the Minnesota Vikings, who are very much in the thick of things and were benefited by the Carolina Panthers losing to the Washington football team. Let's move on to game number 3 of the Big 3, and that was here at SoFi Stadium on Sunday night. Chargers nearly blowing a 17-point second-half lead, but then flipping the script on a familiar Charger narrative thanks to that Mike Williams 53-yard touchdown to retake the lead with 2 minutes to go. Justin Herbert accounting for nearly 500 yards of total offense, 382 through the air, which means, if you're doing some math here, DJ, they had almost 100 yards rushing. How did that area of the Chargers' attack kind of clarify itself in this game?
Well, I thought it was part of the plan going into this game. When you look at a team you're playing, the Steelers, with a beat-up secondary, you've got no Minkah Fitzpatrick, you've got no Joe Hayden. You knew it was going to take extra resources to slow down Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, which meant there's nobody there for the quarterback. When everything expands in that defense, Justin Herbert was decisive, and he took those free yards almost to the tune of 100 yards on the ground. It was outstanding what he was able to do. And, Buck, when you look at this team, when you get Eckler going, you get those two wideouts going, and now you add what he's doing with his legs, that's a whole different animal to deal with.
It's a game changer because you just don't see guys his size. 6'6", 235 pounds on the perimeter making plays. This is the part of the game that I saw at Oregon that got me excited about what he could be. Now he's adding that with all the other stuff that he does as a passer. It does give this offense a different dimension.
And for the Steelers, I mean, you mentioned they were a little shorthanded in this game. They gave up 19 first downs in coverage as a coverage unit here for that Steelers defense. Very unlike them. You certainly felt the absence of Minkah and Joe Hayden. And that final touchdown to Mike Williams, look, I don't know if Minkah Fitzpatrick makes all the difference, but with Trey Norwood kind of getting his eyes caught up on Keenan Allen in the slot, allowing Mike Williams essentially a free release in that cover two look from the Steelers.
Oh, yeah.
That was trouble. And
no TJ Watt.
Yeah, that's huge.
Major difference maker that they were missing. But I want you flip it over to the other side, the Chargers without 3 defensive linemen in this game.
So they figured it out a way.
Braden Fajoco did a nice job in there making some plays. Graziano did a nice job. Those guys all filled in and made it happen.
But here's the other part of it. The Steelers offense kind of played into their hand there by not testing their run defense up the middle.
I mean,
55 total yards. And look, in this show, we are going to talk about ground games that are dominating with the Eagles, with the Colts, and the Patriots have been rolling on the ground. How are the Steelers not in that conversation, Bucky?
Hey, the Steelers are just soft. With a big old T at the end. And that is a four-letter word in Pittsburgh when you think about what the Steelers don't do. They don't physically line up and try and manhandle you when they need to. Getting cute inside the red zone, the five tight area. There we see screen passes. We saw fly sweeps. We saw empty formation. We saw everything but a little old school smash mouth football. Somewhere Chuck Noll is in football heaven just trying to figure out who is this team and the black helmets, because this doesn't look like the Steelers teams that we're accustomed to. And if they don't figure out a way to become more physical on offense, they're going to have a tough, tough road in the AFC.
This was, I felt like, a really nice game for the Chargers, too. To just kind of figure, to kind of bust up some of those old, you know, narratives about what they've been, giving up leads, having special teams blunders cause them to give up big leads. But they figured a way out of it, and now they're right back in the thick of things in the division and a big part of our big three. As we kick off this Elite Eight portion of our Move the Sticks here on Monday, Rhett Lewis, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks back with you, taking a look now at contenders in question. So these are teams like a couple of weeks ago, we might have said more than a month ago, we might have said the Chiefs sort of headlined this segment, right, with the troubles that they were having. They feel like they have righted the ship. So there are plenty of other contenders that are having some issues here, Bucky, starting with one that still technically the number one seed in the AFC.
Oh, the Titans?
Yeah.
You mean the Emperor with no clothes?
Yes.
Because without the King, they're not the same team. And so you take Derrick Henry out of the lineup, and this team struggles, particularly the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. Now, to be fair, the game against the Texans, he didn't have Julio Jones. He didn't have A.J. Brown.
Who's it against?
The 16th seed in the AFC.
The Texans. Like he didn't have everything. He had four interceptions.
Did Deshaun Watson
play? Didn't look great. And so I worry about this team because they've been able to win with toughness and physicality. But right now, they're lacking skill, and that's a problem in the AFC.
I'm not going to put you on the spot because I don't know if I could either. There's no way you can name five players in the Texans. No chance.
Rougier-Hill right there.
That'd be
no
tough.
Chance.
That'd be tough.
Justin Reed, Tyrod Taylor, Brandon Cooks.
That's it. All your squares.
Let me get to the Buffalo Bills here because this team dropped from the number two seed in the AFC all the way down to the seventh seed. And look, when we started this season, the question was, can the Bills get over the hump, beat the Chiefs, right, and get into the Super Bowl? Well, they beat the Chiefs earlier this year, but that's not the problem. The big question now is, can they stop the run? Because Tennessee Titans ran all over them with Derrick Henry. Jonathan Taylor ran all over him with the Indianapolis Colts this week in what was the largest home loss since Josh Allen has been the starter for the Buffalo Bills. And you think they're going to see the Patriots a couple of times later this season, who, by the way, have overtaken the Bills for the lead in the AFC East? There's your question.
Yeah, I'm still buying on the Bills, but I'm a nervous buyer.
Yes.
I'll put it that way.
It's a nervous buy.
I want to get to the next team here, and this is a team that I don't know anybody's talking about at all, but the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, yeah, they had their first taste of adversity.
And now you've seen them come out of that, and this, the guy carrying the ball right here, is what's got me excited, mm-hmm. because Joe Mixon gives him the ability to win different styles of games. We've seen Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, the aerial assault, and how much fun that is. But then you find yourself in some of these kind of grimy games where it's not easy and clean, and you can just turn around and hand it to your 230-pound back and let him go to work. This, to me, is a pretty complete offense right now, and I think on the defensive side of the ball. Remember Trey Hendrickson? Lawson go. They bring in Trey Hendrickson. I don't know, everybody loved that move. He's got 9.5 sacks right now.
Him and Sam Hubbard are a nice little duo.
Playing well, so they can rush the passer. I'm buying on the Bengals. They got a big one coming up against the Steelers.
Look, the first big one that put the Bengals on the map was when they lambasted my team. The Baltimore Ravens. And I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens in terms of just keeping an eye on them, because this is a team that's up and down. They play without Lamar Jackson, but found a way to get a win against Chicago. Their defense plays well at times, but, man, you see these big errors in the back end. This is a game against Chicago that they probably should have lost. They give up a double move late. Marquise Goodwin gets past it. Tyler Huntley comes and leads them down the field, and they somehow walk away with the win. And so they find a way to continue to put the marks in the win column. But, man, there's something about them that you still wonder how good are they going to be when we get into the tournament.
I'll take you from one bird to another. The Arizona Cardinals, to me, what they've done with Colt McCoy picking up a couple wins. How many games have we already talked about today? And Bucky, you were just talking about, well, you didn't have this guy, you didn't have that guy. Oh, the Steelers are missing Minkah Fitzpatrick and TJ. They didn't have a quarterback. And they've gone on the road and they've gotten it done two out of those three games. So to me, the Arizona Cardinals are very much for real. Not only are they winning on the road, they're winning it by double digits in all these football games. They're dominating. So to me, I think what they've done with their backup quarterback about as impressive as anybody. They, to me, are clearly the class of the NFC right now.
Yeah, and just a brief pause. I mean, Has there ever been a year that has better described the importance of a number two quarterback? There have been 50 quarterbacks to start games now in the NFL. 50 quarterbacks here as we sit with one game left of week 11. I'm going to get now to the 49ers, okay? I'd love to see, we saw Trey Lance, one of those 50, by the way, but we haven't seen him very much lately, although that hasn't been a problem for the 49ers, who have found their way on the ground, not necessarily with running backs, this week with Debo Samuel, of course, led them in rushing. You'll have a bit more on that coming up here in just a little bit. Brandon Ayuk had one of his best games of the season, and George Kittle is a monster, as if... Just in case anyone forgot, while Kittle was on IR, he is back, and so too are the 49ers as a contender in the NFC West. I'm putting a positive spin on the contenders in question here, because we had questions about them a couple of weeks ago. They're starting to answer them now.
They are starting to answer them, and I like the way that they're trending. Yes. And they're trending that way because they had a big emotional win over the Rams a couple Monday nights ago. But I'm still going to hang with the Rams because the Rams have star power. They have talent. Just need to see how they can put it together. Had the bye week, so hopefully OBJ, Von Miller can get in the playbook and understand what they're doing while also understanding how they're supposed to act within this culture. Look, they play their worst performance that we've seen them play against the 49ers, and they haven't been up to snuff when it comes to physicality, but I'm a bet on the talent. They have enough star power to get it done. Let's see if they can do it.
They've had trouble with bullies, right? They need to face one of those bully type teams and really punch back and show some physicality. I think what you're getting to there. I'm going to go to the Browns. And look, I sat in this same chair.
Yeah, you did.
And I said, give me the Browns. I think it's the most talented roster in the league. I'd like to bring that one back in because the talent is there. The health is not. Baker Mayfield, I know he's getting ripped for his play. You cannot tell me he's anywhere close to healthy. He doesn't look like the same guy. I mean, the injuries are out there. Yes. They're documented. But I feel like some guys get passes for those. I don't think he is. He does not look right. And when he is not right, this is a very lopsided team that is going to be 100% dependent on what they do in that backfield. But guys, they've got two coming up. They've got the Ravens, a bye, and the Ravens again. So everything is still in front of the Browns. Am I nervous? Yeah, you're darn right. I'm nervous.
You're a little nervous
about
right now.
In on them.
You are. Good news is Wyatt Teller's still out there mashing.
Yes.
So you got him paid. You got Petonio paid. Now we just need to figure out. I mean, can you find a way to get Baker paid?
Can I get Baker Mayfield's shoulder healed? I think that's beyond my powers.
That is beyond your powers, I think. But the Cleveland Browns staying above water and above 500 with this win over the Detroit Lions, but definitely one that brings some cause for concern and question, and that's our contenders in question. Jonathan Taylor with a season high in touchdowns and with his 5 total touchdowns, equaling the amount of touchdowns the Bills defense has allowed to running backs in the previous 10 weeks. Taylor, over 200 scrimmage yards, and the catalyst for the Colts' victory in Orchard Park, New York. Okay, so you might understand that MVP has become a quarterback award, right? So the running backs want to get back in the conversation. Here, though, are, since 2003, some notable running back seasons that have not resulted in an MVP. Just last year, you had King Henry go for over 2K. Chris Johnson, CJ 2K, back in 09, couldn't get the MVP nod with over 2,000 rushing yards. Larry Johnson and Jamal Lewis, both with phenomenal seasons in 03 and 05, and didn't get it either. Adrian Peterson, though, the last non-quarterback to win an MVP back in his 2,000-yard season in 2012. So, Bucky, if it was going to happen, how could a non-quarterback like Jonathan Taylor get himself an MVP?
Man, it has to be so muddy for the quarterbacks because this is a quarterback award. We like to give it to the quarterback on the best team because we feel like the quarterbacks drive the bus, and a lot of times they do. And so this is a situation where Jonathan Taylor would have to spearhead the Colts on a run that leads them to overtake the Tennessee Titans, and he finishes with a ton of yards. He obviously is on track. You already see 1,100 yards right now, and we're just a little past the halfway mark. He certainly will have the production, but will his team have the performance to make it happen?
17 games, right? You get that extra game. So, to me, I think you look at a couple benchmarks here. The 2,000 rushing yards, man, if you can get that and get over 20 touchdowns. And you hit on it, Buck, just kind of a muddied quarterback market where you go around a room with 10 people, you might get 4 or 5 different answers of which quarterback's having the best year. I go back to LT when LaDainian Tomlinson was with the Chargers. He was just so far much better. It was
He scored 50 touchdowns.
You can't ignore what he's doing. I mean, it was just every single week, and you're like, okay, who's the best player in the NFL? Ask LT. Anybody on the street, LT. That's what it has to be this year for Jonathan Taylor.
It's got to be unequivocal.
Off.
So, I mean, like you mentioned the different quarterbacks that might be in the conversation. I mean, like we started off talking about Tom Brady. Dak Prescott has been in that conversation. Kirk Cousins, I mean, with his touchdown interception ratio, is up there.
Lamar Jackson's been in that mix. Yes, Justin Herbert's starting to get some buzz. Right? I mean, there's
Mahomes
just so many names.
In that conversation, even though this year is a down year. So, yeah, you have to do something exceptional as a non-quarterback, right? I mean, it's only happened like four times this century that a quarterback has not won it.
If you look at the Heisman Trophy, we talk about how if you have a couple players in the same conference, they kind of split the vote, and then somebody else can win. I think the quarterback vote could be split. He just has to be by far the top running back, which he's on his way to doing.
Yeah, he has to put up big numbers in a team, has to perform at a level that really makes you catch his eye. And so Jonathan Taylor has put up some of those numbers. We saw the 5-touchdown performance against the Bills. Now, can the Colts get on enough of a run where we start paying more attention to him down the stretch?
I just want to see a receiver win an MVP just once.
Cooper Kupp to win that thing so bad.
Come on. What are we doing? Breaking Jerry Rice records. Like, what else do we have to do here to get in the MVP discussion? It's time for our weekly look at your rookie report cards. Queuing up Mac Jones, who we didn't see on Sunday, but saw in a shutout victory over the Atlanta Falcons on Thursday Night Football. We're just giving him a good solid B here. Didn't take a whole lot. Certainly winning again with run game and with defense, particularly in this game, showcased that accuracy and efficiency that have become his calling card with the Patriots this rookie year, and then took some sacks, as I'm sure you guys noticed on the scouts feed over on Prime Video as well.
Overall solid game, though. Yeah. And it does help when the other team doesn't score a point.
It helps take a little pressure off your margin for error a little bit there. Meanwhile, the margin for error, though, for Trevor Lawrence, Bucky, very small here.
Teeny tiny. Yeah. Very, very small when it comes to Trevor Lawrence and his margin for error. And Trevor Lawrence is being asked to do stuff where he needs to put the team on his back.
Dang,
and unfortunately,
him with the D?
He is not ready to do that.
That's
he needs more
grade.
Help.
That's a
he
team
has
grade.
To play. He has to
they
play
no
great.
Shot at blocking both.
I mean,
in that
nothing.
Game.
I mean, just all of it has been bad, bad, bad. Not until the end when the 49ers kind of called off the dogs and let him throw some passes and stuff like that. Did he get it going? But it was a rough day. Rough day for Trevor Lawrence against the Niners.
And now their best player on offense, Jamal Agnew's banged up.
As we all thought coming into the season.
Exactly right. Hope he gets back out there as soon as possible. Time now for some scout stories. Yeah, it's never too early to look at the 2022 NFL draft order, which has the winless Detroit Lions up on top there at number one. How about those New York Jets sitting there with two spots inside the top five, Jaguars and Texans there at 3 and 4. This is kind of an interesting year because you're seeing some of the usual suspects up there in the top five, and some of those went quarterback last year, like the Jags.
Yes.
And the Jets, which means, of course, the Lions would have their pick of the litter, bad pun, at quarterback here, especially for a year, DJ, though, where the quarterback position in the college ranks is very unsettled at this point.
Yeah, from what I've seen thus far, I don't think anybody warrants being picked up there in the top five out of this quarterback class. Now, there's two different ways to build a championship team. You can go get that big-time quarterback and then build around the quarterback, or you can do what Seattle did during their Super Bowl run, build up the entire team, and then insert the quarterback. I think when you look at the Lions and the Texans, both picking in the top five, Buck, I don't know if there's going to be a quarterback for them to pick. To me, it's about establishing the line of scrimmage, whether that's a really good group of defensive linemen, maybe go offensive line. Detroit did that last year. Build up the trenches, and then you're going to find your quarterback after the fact.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that strategy because in looking at this year's class, there's not a slam dunk, as you will, when it comes to the quarterback position. And so if you don't have that quarterback that you feel good about coming in day one and being able to kind of reverse the fortunes of the franchise, add more pieces, add more weapons. So when you do find that quarterback and you have an opportunity to get him, you can get him and you can hit the ground running right now.
Look, the other thing, when you look inside those two top five picks for the Jets, how about the situation there with Joe Douglas? Because you've got the worst defense in the league.
Yeah.
You know, you're hoping you're going to get Carl Lawson back and that's going to help. You're playing a lot of young guys, but that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
But then with Zach Wilson, there's still some holes along this offensive line that you've got to get filled as well. So they're going to have some decisions to make on with those two top five picks. Now, there's going to be a lot of good players to choose
from. And he'd love to have a quarterback really emerge as a bona fide number one overall pick, right? And then have his pick of the litter or the best position player out there. And again, those quarterbacks that we're talking about, it's the Matt Corrals at Ole Miss. It's Kenny Pickett at Pitt. It's Desmond Ridder at Cincinnati. Malik Willis in that kind of crew. Some of those guys, which we'll see down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl as we start gearing up here for the draft season, which is coming up quicker than you think, especially for some teams up there in the top five. And one game left to put a bow on this week. It's the Bucs and the Giants on Monday Night Football, and it's time for the Bucs here, Bucky, to figure things out. Haven't won in what feels like a month based on their last two losses and a bye week in between.
Yeah, it's time for them to figure it out. Like, a lot of times when you're the defending champion, you go into the season and there's a little lethargic attitude that you have because you kind of done it. You want to fast forward and get to the postseason, but there's no automatic next step. And so this is the Bucs learning how to deal with everyone coming at them, getting their best shot. And so can Tom Brady and the coaching staff get everyone on the same page, and they begin to put together clean football performances? Because if they do, Tampa Bay Buccaneers certainly have the talent to be able to get there.
My one warning for the Bucs, I've talked to several GMs and coaches after they've played the Giants, and
they're
all say that defensive front is very, very good.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good battle.
Yeah, they're feisty. And look, the Bucs kind of had a little bit of a lull. You might remember last year before they went on that run to close out their season on the win streak. And then, of course, the rest was history into the Super Bowl. And clearly, the Bucs were an appealing destination for Tom Brady because of the talent that would have been surrounding him. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and all the talent they had on the defensive side of the ball as well. Similarly, it feels like the Denver Broncos have spent the last, I don't know, 3 to 4 years assembling the talent at wide receiver, at tight end, and trying to figure out the offensive line for an eventual long-term answer at quarterback.
In the last week, they're paying him. Tim Patrick got paid. You see Cortland Sutton got paid. They've got a young K.J. Hamler who's a good young player. They've got Jerry Jeudy. Buck, this is like holding out a sign in front of Aaron Rodgers' house.
Help wanted.
Saying, come on over.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they have a lot of weapons. They are still missing that high-end quarterback that will push them over top. Yeah. You got to be able to compete with Justin Herbert and Pat Mahomes. You don't have that, you don't have a chance.
And I'm telling you, as bad as things have gotten in Seattle, and as frustrating as that is.
Oh, is Russell Wilson available?
Russell Wilson, I might be trying to get my way there as well.
From NFC West to AFC West. That'd be interesting out there. The Broncos have had, and they've been assembling this talent. It's just, you got to have something to pull it all together.
I'm just imagining Sierra covering John Denver now. A little Rocky Mountain High.
Putting it all together.
Bring that hit back and right to the top of the charts.
If you had Wham, Sierra, and John Denver on your Move the Sticks music bingo card, you're the lucky winner today. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back with you same time, same place next Monday.